Now we have him in place, the senator of the first district in the state of New York, Anthony Palumbo. Sir, we have you now. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning. How are you?
Good to have you, my friend. So we're at the milestone, 70%. Let the bugles sound, the red carpet rolled out, and the announcement yesterday. I tell you, a little too much for me, a little pomp and circumstance. And listen, you want to do the fireworks, it's great. It honors the frontliners. They deserve everything. But finally, we hit the mark. And listen, I have stated we could have done this a lot sooner. My goodness, businesses need it. But in essence, we finally hit those numbers. So let the games begin, right, as far as opening up, sir?
Well, it was a long time coming, right? And, you know, the governor always said, flatten the curve, we'll get back to normal. I think a lot of it had to do with just the fact that I hate to say it and be, you know, a little bit judgmental, but his personal problems, I think, had a lot to do with our continued closure. That, you know, there were a lot of issues circling around him. He's got multiple investigations, multiple problems, you know, sexual harassment, you know, possibly even criminal charges for concealing, intentionally concealing the nursing home death numbers. While he was negotiating his, you know, over $5 million worth of a book deal. So just I'm grateful that we're open, but and we called on the legislature to revoke those powers every day, over 50 times. My conference said, look, let's get back to business. And I do apologize. I have a summer cold, which is the worst. I'm sorry I sound a little stuffy here, but, you know, at the end of the day, we're here, we're moving. I just wish it could have been done a little bit sooner, because many businesses, they're not going to open again because the closures were just too prolonged and too severe, and eventually they shut their doors, and particularly in New York City. They've been devastated economically, and many businesses have either moved away or just folded up their tent. So, I'm just hopeful that we can get back to life and get back to business, and many of these people can recover. And it isn't too late, that they haven't lost their home or lost their businesses, because you know, governor dragged his feet. We had many other states who were open, whose numbers were better than ours, and you know, we're all adults here, and we can take the adequate precautions in order to get back to life. So I'm just glad that we're moving forward finally.
You could have opened sooner. There's no question about it. And by the way, you sound good. I'm suffering too. I got allergies like you wouldn't believe. But in essence, it could have been done a lot sooner. There's no question about it. Now, you know, we just did our financial report, and I couldn't help but think we are in the midst of inflation like we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, everything, Senator, is literally off the charts. And I can't help but think right now, with the state going through what they're going through with deficits and raising taxes and everything else, you know, these are tough times right now for New Yorkers and for the folks on the island. You know, they're very tough time. I'm worried about. I'm glad. Light off the fireworks. You know, it's for the essential workers. Listen, they deserve it. Okay, I don't know where we'd be without them. But the overall picture right now, as far as the state, I'm very, very concerned. Taxes are going to go through the roof. We get the salt stuff and everything else. You know, it's a tough time right now to be a New Yorker. It really is, from a fiscal standpoint, no?
Well, without a doubt. Now, we are now the highest taxed state in the nation. When you see what happened in the budget, you know, we were clamoring. We needed $15 billion with a B in order to get square. And that also included the $6 billion deficit that we had prior to the pandemic. And we got over that. Our revenue projections were $2.5 billion higher. We got $12.9 billion from Joe Biden, from the federal government. We had $5 billion in change from Donald Trump, from the CARES Act. So we're looking good. And then what happened in the budget? The progressive wing took over and said, well, we actually need an additional $4 billion, with a B, in taxes. So essentially, if you live in New York City, you're paying 16% more in taxes than those in New Hampshire and Florida and Texas. So why would you stay? What kind of a business person are you? And I've discussed this about the really wealthy people, too, that they all were just going to beat up on those millionaires and billionaires, as Bernie used to say. Well, at the end of the day, how smart are you? If you're making that kind of money, and let's say you're making, you know, outrageous amounts of money. The people who pay the bulk of our taxes, by the way, are those hedge fund people. You make $100 million, and you're taking home about 50, actually a little less than that, about 46%. So you're taking home $46 million of the $100 million that you earn. Why would you sit there, and why would you stay here in New York City and say, this is wonderful, I love paying all these taxes, or move to Florida and take an extra 16 million dollars home? That's what good business people do. So I'm just terrified that we're going to lose our revenue base very quickly. And just the little things that are pretty obvious, I think, to most, but for some reason don't seem to be to the majority. And when you talk about, you know, the overall inflation rate, just to comment on that quickly, you've got the same mentality on the federal government. In the federal government, you remember when the Governor Cuomo said, "Oh, it's too environmentally insensitive to run the gas pipeline from Pennsylvania to New York to Long Island. We're not going to do it." Reminds me of the Keystone Pipeline. The same sort of obstinance. We can't immediately shut it down. Joe Biden does when he gets into office. What do you think is going to happen to that petroleum? That oil and gas, that petroleum-based product is not going to be eliminated. It's now being transported on our roads, much more environmentally insensitive than a pipeline. So now you've got more accidents, more spills, more dangerous conduct, and more environmentally insensitive conduct because they're now shipping it by truck instead of just sending it down a pipeline. So, you know, this sort of, it's ignorance, but it's intentional. So they know better, but it's a good soundbite, and it makes a wonderful, you know, statement to the public that I'm environmentally conscious because it's terrible. But that's to people who don't have any idea what they're talking about, because those who do say it's actually the exact opposite. It affects jobs and further increases the cost of things, which is just horrendous at this point in time.
No question. Recipe for disaster. We're talking with Senator Anthony Palumbo. Session wraps up a week ago, right? So a couple of things. And I've spoken about this with a few folks regarding safety, and I'm still keeping an eye on things because I'm waiting for that other shoe to drop, and I think it will. You know, this clean slate bill, the Less is More Act regarding technicalities, regarding parolees. You know, I don't know what's going on deep in the mindset of those who sit in the assembly and everything else. I can't figure it out. Are they completely naive as far as what's happening in our world today, especially in the state, especially in New York City, where crime and the numbers are completely off the charts? I mean, it's almost as if, you know, we're watching one of these scary movies, you know, where, you know, the brains have been washed as far as vital information and everything else. No, wait, what was the name of that movie? I forget the name, but one of my favorite movies, in which you have this demented family takes in people and they perform this surgery on the brains of people, and they turn them into not really even, you know, rational human beings. But that's what it's like right now. When you're talking about clean slate, when you're expunging records, when you are not even allowing background checks to individuals who might be looking for jobs within the schools, within certain situations of disabilities where those who work, you know, it is unbelievable. It really is. I can't figure this one out. And I think this clean slate bill is going to come through any day. I mean, maybe they're going to have one of these sessions with emergency proportions here, but that's what we're looking at here. Am I wrong?
You're not. And the fact that many of the members say these things with a straight face, I mean, some of them believe their virtue. They really do. But I think most of them, not all of them, but most members in the majority, you know, they have a pretty good idea as to what the practical ramifications are and they but they may not have ever practiced, and I want to give them the benefit of the doubt because some of them are actually, you know, decent people from my experience. But when you have, for example, the Less is More Act, less supervision, in my opinion, means more crime because they've got, look, there are some laudable aspects of that. I debated that. And I debated, Brian Benjamin has an MBA from Harvard who was the sponsor of that bill. Not a dumb guy. And I said, look, the idea and the concept is laudable, and I might even be able to get behind it, except they always triple jump the line. They add more nonsense, and I think that comes from their counsel, who are true believers and real progressives, or they just want to be so progressive because they need to out-liberal anyone that may face them in a primary. Because in those districts, for example, I mean, and Brian Benjamin's running for New York State for New York City comptroller, so he's running citywide against a bunch of progressives, and it's all about the primary. Once you win the Democratic primary, the race is over. You won. There's really no realistic Republican challenger because the enrollment is, you know, 80% Democrat and 20% all else. So at the end of the day, that's the race. So you need to be the most left person. You need to be as progressive as you can to appeal to just the Democratic voters. You know, the moderates and Republicans be damned. So at the end of the day, we're debating this bill. And look, you cannot go back to jail if you're on parole for a technical violation. You're 20 minutes late at past curfew. You know, you're late to your appointment. That makes sense. You know what? Maybe you get someone, some parole officer just doesn't like you, or they're really aggressive, and they send you back for really a technical kind of silly violation. Okay, that is not unreasonable. But what else do they add? You can show up high. You can show up as late. You can abscond. If you abscond, you can only go back for 5 days. And then the second time you can only go back for, I believe it was 10 days, and then the third one for a maximum of 30 days. That's not parole. Parole is you are released to prove to us that you can abide by rules because we have a society of rules. Some of the rules that you break are actually crimes. And then when you get out, we say, okay, you should be in jail now, but we're going to let you loose early so you can show to us that you can be an upstanding, law-abiding citizen. And even though they seem insignificant, you can abide by these very limited rules. And this is a former prosecutor in me. That's how this works. But now you have, you're good for 30 days, your sentence is reduced by 30 days. They're contemplating things that had nothing to do with the actual crime, because when you take a plea, which 99% of cases do, and you get sentenced, or even if you're convicted after trial, all those factors are considered. The impact on the victim, your previous history, your family history, all those things are considered. So those factors that go into the balance regarding sentencing are no longer being considered way after your sentencing, now that you're released, and they continue to shorten your sentence without even considering the victim, the impact of the crime, what you did, the nature and facts of your crime. So it's just absolutely off the wall that that is only to the benefit of the defendant and completely disregards the victim. That is the, quote, Less is More Act. The Clean Slate Bill is even worse. Thank God there was a technical problem. And quite frankly, you got to give kudos to the governor, because the governor wanted his MTA appointments in the Senate, and he said, I'm not going to give you the message of necessity. Too bad, session's going to end unless you give me what I want. And, you know, the governor came back to life and did what he does, which is kind of bully people. And fortunately, he wouldn't give them the message of necessity, so the clock ran out before they could pass the Clean Slate Bill once they fixed the mistake that they had in the legislation. So that worked out to our benefit. All this stuff is just, unfortunately, I think, just really part of the political process at this point, because it's all politics. And the progressives who now control both chambers are driving the bus, and that's scary because we're all less safe as a result, because their complete focus is on criminal justice reform and making life more easy for people who are incarcerated and people who are committing crimes, which just makes absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, clean slate. I mean, think about it. And we've said this 100 times, but, you know, proposal of sealing records for those with misdemeanors after 3 years. I think it's after 7 years for those who have the felony records.
Yeah,
it would have applied, I guess, to anybody with any crime in their record except registered sex offenders, right?
Right.
But that's really what the clean slate is, correct?
Yeah. And it's including murders, including attempted murders, felony assaults, and other misdemeanors like endangering the welfare of a child. You don't register. The only ones that they said were the ones that were registrable offenses. So if you are constantly abusing your children and you went to jail for it, that gets expunged. You want to be a bus driver, knock yourself out because nobody can find that out. It's sealed after what, 2 years? Oh, sealed. I'm sorry, I believe it's sealed after 1 under the last iteration of the bill where nobody can get to it, so an employer can't see it, and then expunged as if it never happened after 3. That's what we're talking about, that those sorts of crimes are unavailable to the world. So you could be a bus driver and drive kids around even though you abuse them for many, many years of your life, and now you're saying that, well, I think I'm appropriate for this, and your employer can't even consider it. How silly is that? It's just dangerous, and does nothing to promote the greater good. Yet, for whatever reason, as we just said earlier, that these people who are intelligent people say with a straight face that this is going to make the world a better place.
Yeah, that's really what it is about. It's to me, it's about safety. The biggest challenge facing this state right now is crime. And I'm talking not only New York City, folks, Buffalo. The numbers in Buffalo were up the charts too. I was reading the murders that have taken place in Buffalo. You know, and we're doing nothing about it to turn it around. I mean, we continue to push these policies and knowing we are exacerbating an issue, which is safety, which, you know, and I always remember the governor said, I always remember the words, you know, he said the biggest 3 issues facing New York City, crime, crime, and crime. That's what he said. But yet we're allowing ex-cons back on the street. Now, I'm not saying to condemn forever one who has done their dirty deeds, okay? I do believe there is a day in court or a day at a hearing. But right now, we are seeing something we haven't seen before, you know, which is a wave of stuff. Now, listen. The bail reform has a lot to do with it. You know, you have stripped judges of their powers. Okay, we have said that 1,000 times. It's just not the right time to put all this into play right now. And people are fed up. I mean, people don't want to live in the city anymore. You know, they're going out to the suburbs and everything else. That's great. And a lot of people live in the state. They've had it. You know, they can't afford it. And now it's a safety issue. So why even bother, you know? That's what it's really all about in my estimation.
Right.
So,
and why wouldn't you leave New York?
Yeah.
When you think about it, I mean, Mayor Giuliani came in the broken windows theory, right? You leave one window broken and more will get broken. But you attend to that and the big stuff takes care of itself. And he cleaned that city up. God forbid Maya Wiley wins this primary because whoever wins the mayoral primary, as we know, it's the same as most other races in New York City. Then they'll win. Maya Wiley wants to take $1 billion, if not more, from the police and suggested taking their guns. How nuts is that? So the statewide policy has created a disaster, and now you want to do this? I mean, the clean slate, just to comment one more time on that, when you say that you, in conjunction with everything else that's happening, and one other state has done this, Michigan, and it only applies to nonviolent crimes, not all crimes. And this is in the one in New York that's proposed would be virtually all crimes except a limited few, and including violent. So that's going to do nothing to make our streets safer. And you have these mayoral candidates. Eric Adams seems to be in the lead. He's a retired police captain. He'll do the right thing, I hope. I mean, I'm really hopeful because this is still my state, my city. I live here with my family. I'm not going anywhere for a while, at least until it becomes completely unbearable. I have no plans on leaving New York, and neither do my kids, who are young still. But, you know, at the end of the day, if crime continues to increase, nobody's going to stick around because people are afraid to do it. And I see out here on the East End, you know, my Senate district has the Hamptons and the North Fork and Shelter Island. There, people aren't leaving. They're enrolling their kids in school. They have no intention of going back to Manhattan. And why would they? Because the place is a disaster and it's dangerous. Most important thing in life. What is government supposed to be doing? Protecting us, giving us health care, or creating an infrastructure that can keep give us can do something by way of hospitals, bridges, roads, and public safety, right? Those are the probably the 3 primary things that government should be doing. Have a standing military and police and fire and law enforcement to protect us. That's something that's pretty basic. And if we're not providing those services, then shame on us.
But if Maya Wiley ever did get in, you're right, an extension of you-know-who, it would be an absolute disaster. And you're talking about setting back another 4 years. I agree with you. I think Adams will get the Democratic nomination. Boy, I tell you, one note here. I had Curtis Sliwa on a couple of weeks ago. The dulcet tones of Sliwa from way back. An interesting guy. I just don't think a Republican's going to sit in Gracie Mansion. But I agree with you. I think it's Adams to lose, his race to lose. One last thing, sir, before I let you go. So you spoke about the investigations and everything else in the beginning of the conversation. You know, we saw some movement here with these subpoenas from the Justice Department and the book, all regarding the nursing homes. Now, I had Phil Boyle on, Senator Boyle, your colleague, who stated to me, he really believes this governor is going to walk away. Now, I don't. I think he will not be impeached. I think he will finish out his term. I don't think he will run for term number four. I think the heat's going to be on a little too much. What is your feeling, and when do we see more movement as far as these investigations are concerned? Go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think the assembly impeachment is going to go anywhere. Look, having handled many investigations in my career as a prosecutor, this isn't rocket science. How long does it take to interview these witnesses? They're factual witnesses. There's no continuing investigation. It's not like there's a wiretap and there's a long enterprise of corruption where you've got to get through all of these nuanced avenues downstream. You can figure this out. He's paid tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to a law firm because he didn't think he could do it himself. Chuck Levine's playing politics. The only time he's going to say anything, unfortunately, and I hate to say this about a former colleague because I was the ranking Republican on that committee in the Assembly. I'm on Judiciary as well in the Senate. But he is not going to do anything until he's painted into a corner. So unless the Attorney General's report is really flagrant regarding the sexual harassment, he's not going to do anything. And I'll call it now. He hasn't done anything. It should not take several months. Could you imagine if the governor was in custody and you had to hurry up with an investigation like this? What do you need to find out? Everything that's happened has happened. And it's all factual investigation. You can interview witnesses, determine the credibility, and put them in a grand jury. Or, which is what you do in a criminal investigation, for this, just simply make a determination and charge him. It's really quite simple. So the sexual harassment stuff, obviously, terrible stuff. It's a hostile work environment. One of them could be a physical assault, which could be criminal. But most of that is civil. I don't think the governor leaves with any of that. The big problem that I see, putting my lawyer hat on, is the Justice Department investigation and the book deal. That quid pro quo, that intentionally concealing of those numbers with a personal book deal that was a $4 million contract, he made over $5 million as a result. And he didn't want his public persona to be tarnished by saying we have a tremendous amount of death in our nursing homes. Therefore, let's exclude those, even though they were sick, they got transported to the hospital and died 20 minutes later. We're going to call those hospital deaths. We're going to fudge the numbers, even though they had to edit the report from the Department of Health. That is the biggest problem. That will have nothing to do with whether he wants to voluntarily resign or not. That's criminal. And I think the facts are going in that direction, and the subpoenas are being issued. And what they'll do is, like you do in any good investigation, is you start to grab people on the fringes who could be criminally liable and acting in concert and part of the conspiracy, because that's what it was, because it was a conscious decision to make these changes. And you basically get them to flip. You can threaten them. Look, you want to get charged? You're not really a target. You're someone who we can put some pressure on. You tell us the truth, and we'll let you go. The problem is this, too. Last comment. The investigator who's handling this, not a dumb person, but was also one of the investigators in the Mueller investigation. They spent $2 million? Million with an M. $42 million. And it got zero on Donald Trump, who was the target. Yeah, they got some collateral people for unrelated stuff, some for partially related stuff. But the whole Russiagate, Russia collusion, was nonsense. And they couldn't figure that out until they spent over $40 million of our tax dollars to try and then got nothing on the target. And trust me, the feds have a tremendous hammer. And if there's just a little nuanced thing that you did wrong, you can get charged and convicted, particularly under honest services, because people in public service are really, really exposed with that very nuanced area of law. So the bottom line is, I don't think the Assembly is going to do anything unless they're basically painted into a corner, and then you'll see all the fanfare. We took a tough stance, and they're going to make all kinds of silly public statements that they brought it to justice and also the nonsense. But that's just politics. That's useless. The impeachment investigation is useless. Something would have happened by now if anything was going to happen. But now the Justice Department, I think, will be impartial. And if they treat Governor Cuomo like they treat any other John Q. citizen, I think he's got a big problem. And he may be looking at a criminal indictment, and rightfully so, because he intentionally concealed those numbers for nothing other than, no justification other than to make him look good publicly so he could secure a very lucrative book deal.
Yeah, and I'll say this. Let's not wipe out girl number two there, Charlotte Bennett, as far as what she has stated. That's some damning stuff. That one could do him, and not Lindsey Boylan, the first. I'm talking about Charlotte Bennett, the second. And I agree with you. The numbers were fudged in order to satisfy his ego and this book, which is as deplorable as you can get. We'll see. We'll see what awaits. Always a pleasure. Tough conditions for you, sir. My recommendation, a little NyQuil. Put a scarf around the old neck. You'll feel as good as new tomorrow morning. How's that?
I love it. I'll take the doctor's orders. Thanks, Jane. Thanks for having me, buddy.